Hello, everybody, and welcome to the sixth edition of the Spotlight discussions that Frank and Stan have with colleagues on a single topic. That's the difference between the Spotlight discussion and our weekly Frank and Stan chats, which tend to ramble all over the place. But I'm really pleased to say that we've got Liz Gregory and Mark Innes with us, and I'm going to let them explain who they are and perhaps why we're talking about what is in effect the marketisation of school leadership qualifications. So, Liz, should we kick off with you? So, who are you?
Hi Frank, hi Stan. My
Hi.
name is Dr. Liz Gregory. I am a lecturer in education at the Manchester Institute of Education at Manchester University. My background is as a teacher. I was a teacher of GCSE and A-level English for a very long time in a college of further education, so I've got a teaching background, and then came over to Manchester probably about 5 years ago to take up my post at MIE.
So, where was your teaching career?
So my teaching career was in the Northwest. I was at a big FE
Oh,
college
right,
in.
yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Yeah, I wondered whether it was the other side of the Pennines or something, but it looks as though it's probably this side of the Pennines. So that's.
Yes, it was.
I was going to say that's great, but I didn't mean that because I don't want to offend anybody on the other side of the Pennines. Mark, who are you?
But I am on the other side of the
Yeah,
Pennines.
you
I've
are.
also a teacher for 12 years in schools and colleges in South Yorkshire, which is where I live. And then in 2017, I joined Manchester Institute of Education as a lecturer in initial teacher education. And I've since sort of moved sideways a little bit into lecturer in education. And I'm also studying part-time for a professional doctorate in education, which is sort of in the final stages at the minute, which investigate multi-academy trusts and policy enactment.
Well,
Oh.
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Every time we have guests on, we think, Stan and I think we've had a busy career, but then the guests come on and completely wipe us out in terms, makes us feel as though we've just been hanging around, just not doing very much. But what happened was you and a colleague, Lisa Murta, published a Berra blog about this sort of your views on the marketisation of school leadership qualifications, and it really struck a chord for me and Stan. Okay, because we have spoken about this on a number of our Frank and Stan chats. So let me not take all the glory away from your research or your thoughts. Which one of you is going to give a little introduction to that blog? Who's going to kick off?
Well, Mark is listed as lead writer, so I think that
Oh,
means
well. Well, your
Mark.
name comes first there, Mark. So should we go to you then? Yeah.
It's probably helpful if we could go back a little bit to our first blog that myself, Liz, and Lisa did, which was when the at the launch of the Teacher Education and Professional Learning Group in MIE, we had a great day where we had various speakers on different aspects of trainee teacher retention and recruitment, and we wrote following that. It was such an interesting day that we put together, drew the thoughts together into a blog, which was the Dropping Off a Cliff blog that we wrote, and was published in February 2023, and that attracted a lot of attention. That was focused on a lot of the initial teacher training policy and reasons for kind of drop-offs in that area. That was really successful. I think that ended up being like the best read Berra blog of that year. So we thought, oh, we'll do another one. And we decided to kind of shift the focus a little bit because there's lots written about the teacher training side of things. But there's this idea of the golden thread that is there in the core curriculum framework and the early career framework. And we sort of followed that golden thread to see, well, where does it go? And we looked at the CPD, the Continuing Professional Development, and the NPQs. And I think it was Lisa had found an advert by some of the providers advertising the MPQs and the very sort of corporate language that they were using to advertise some of these programs. And we sort of took it from there, really, that we thought, oh, this is an interesting area to investigate. And the more we looked into it and we saw some of the sort of the big players involved and the finances behind it, and just thought, yeah, there's a bit of a a hook there that got us interested in the story really behind it.
So, Liz, the paper's quite neat, isn't it? Because I love this idea of it being like basically a pack of cards. It's a house of cards. But it talks about, it starts off with the Ace of Spades. So, can you perhaps develop that point for us, what you actually mean by those Ace of Spades? Because I think it's focused around a small number, I think four multi-academy trusts, isn't it?
It's this is what happens when two of your three writers are former English teachers, I think, is you end up with something bursting with metaphors. Came up with the analogy, kind of the gambling, the playing cards analogy, I think it's very apt. I seem to recall Mark Berrow made us tone it down a little bit. I think perhaps we over metaphor.
The first version of it was very heavy on the metaphor, I think, yeah.
We use this as a metaphor. So the part of the title is House of Cards, sort of this perhaps idea could down at any moment. But yes, the idea behind the Ace of Spades, which is the first section of the blog, is very much focused on the announcement in 2022 that these four, just four multi-school trusts would run the new National Institute of Teaching with this stated aim of delivering the golden thread of teacher development. And I say it was that got us so interested, really, not that teacher support and training and development isn't massively important, but there seems to be a very narrow view of what works and who is in a position to deliver that, which very much sort of links in with ideas around lack of autonomy or lack of kind of professional freedom. As Mark says, this grew out of some work that we were doing on initial teacher training or initial teacher education, as we try and persist in calling it, and about the CCF and about the EZF as well, and the role of the EEF. Sorry, I'm using too many acronyms. Pick some of those. It was Lisa found this job advert, and we had a look at a few more actually, and actually looked at some of them in our reading group as well that we have linked to the research group. We were very struck by kind of the corporate nature of the language and by how it seemed to education,
Yeah.
really.
I think that, I used to be a CEO of a multi-academy trust with the co-op, and we had a professional development program that had sort of organically grown. A head teacher within the trust was keen to sort of try and get a sort of more consistent approach towards training, and also trying to sort of make sure that new, not just senior leaders, but all teaching staff understood what those sort of cooperative values and principles were, and the history of the movement and stuff like that. And actually, all of this sort of the sort of development of these sorts of centralized programs sort of undercut it, it sort of it because they have a sort of national understanding. There's a MPQH, which has a sort of like a currency. Is that the word? So we struggled at times to get staff to appreciate the significance of that sort of program, because those that were sort of ambitiously looking beyond the trust were keen to go down the MPQH route, because that felt like sticking with the that felt like a really good card. That was a jack or a queen, just sort of moving on to these analogies. But it felt much stronger than the card that we could give them, even though it perhaps was more relevant to the schools that we were serving, you know, in the communities we were serving. So I think that's similar to what I think Stan was talking before, wasn't it, Stan, about the work you were doing in Lancashire and how that was undermined a little bit by this sort of work.
Yeah, it's when there's no flexibility. The point that Lancashire was quite a large provider of CPD and initial teacher education and other things. But what happened was that the school leaders liked the fact that the people presenting were honest and could put things in context and could be flexible about how this will impact on your school. And we got to the point where we were delivering a number of national initiatives, but then started to get the message that no, you can't drift away from this particular slide, and you must say it in this way, and you can't tone it any other way than it is. And we made an executive decision that that's not what we thought our school leaders wanted, and even locally, when the county council decided they needed schools to know this and that, we would quite often say, well, this is what is being said, and this is what I would do if I was still a head teacher. So somewhere between those two bases is where to aim yourself. And you know, also the flexibility of saying, but if you're in a two-teacher school, this might not apply.
Well,
Learning how to deal with a large senior management team will be irrelevant if there's just you and your friend who work in the school.
this is the issue, isn't it? Is that it's not that teacher CPD should be funded. It is that lack of flexibility, isn't it? And by funneling the government money in a particular direction, you are steering people towards sort of this one size fits all qualification, which anybody that's even been in a class, ever been in a classroom will know is not a model that works for teaching. This very kind of functional one size fits all doesn't have that flexibility of valuing other qualifications and training that might be more useful in your particular context.
I'm I
Always
mean
remember a head teacher saying to me, she'd done MPQH. This is in the very early days, to be fair, of MPQH. And she said, I've done all the training and I came into headship thinking, I've got the vision, I'm carrying the torch. All I need to do is tell everyone what the vision. And she said, and there was nothing in the training that helped me when Mrs. Goggins said, we don't do that here. And there was nothing in my training that prepared me for that. And she felt actually that in a sense, she'd been moved backwards by the training. As I say, it was a long time ago, so it was MPQH in its very first initial development. But it didn't do management. It did leadership, and new head teachers need a bit of management as well as leadership training.
I mean, Mark, you're in this position, aren't you, really? Or, you know, in some respects, you're doing a PhD at the moment, aren't you? You know, so I mean, in that respect, I mean, you've put your professional development into that sort of research area. You know, the work you're doing. I mean, I'm interested. Have you actually personally undertaken any of the national professional qualifications, and has it spat you out, or have you just decided they're not for me, and I want this sort of more sort of
No,
academic route?
I am no. I mean, I've never done an NPQ. I think it was about the time that I moved to the university that the sort of the newer the fuller range of NPQs was brought out in 2017. I had done a little bit of leadership training when I was teaching. You know, where a school up the road was a provider, and I got sent there to do what was some, you know, some useful training where I got to speak with, you know, kind of other people in similar sort of senior roles. So we don't have a personal experience of NPQs, and I think one of the things, you know, that we're looking to investigate really is, you know, how do people find them, and you know, and to analyze people's thoughts on doing them, and we are keen to be sort of balanced about them. That if somebody wants to do an NPQ and they want to do it with one of these providers, great. There might be something in it for them. I think our issue is with the that control of the market, that the relatively kind of small per teacher amount of money that's there, because it the 184 million or whatever over that 3 years that we talked about in the first paragraph of the blog, it sounds a lot until you break it down and think, well, actually, it's over 3 years, and that's over 400 and odd thousand teachers in England. It amounts to kind of about 130 quid per year per teacher, something like that, and so it's that steering with that money towards this particular set of providers. And when you look at some of the outlines and the materials, it is a very linear approach of learn this, what good leadership looks like, learn what an outstanding lesson looks like, learn what outstanding behavior looks like. It just seems to us very, very narrow, and think that people should have autonomy, really, as teachers and school leaders, to decide what CPD works best for them, and it contradicts a lot of the promises of education policy around academies and maths, and it's all about giving autonomy. But when you look at things like this, I think it's one of several mechanisms that take that autonomy away from teachers and school leaders, really.
It's interesting because I wasn't I don't remember an advert seeking applications from Multi Academy Trusts for these four for this sort of like role. You know what I mean? And actually, the cynic in me would say, well, if I was the CEO of, because I wasn't the CEO of one of these four, I probably wouldn't have bothered anyway, because I'd think it'd be stitched up anyway. You know what I mean? There'd be a lot of effort put into an application, might show willing, but actually, I think that there perhaps was an intention, just well, there was, to give it to a certain number of multi academy trusts, and the connectivity. No disrespect to any of the multi academy trusts involved here, that's genuine, but there's a little bit too much connectivity with other organisations within the sector. So, for example, the CEO of Star Academies Trust is on the Ofsted board. Now, for me, I'd be immediately looking at connectivity and whether or not that actually looks, even if it, there's no sort of jiggery-pokery going on, but that's a very easy line of attack, isn't it? In terms of, well, we knew that Star would be in there. Forget the fact that they were, possibly a very successful multi-academy trust and very well led. It's not perhaps the best of positions to be in, in terms of that connectivity.
No, agreed. And again, it's not about pointing the finger at
No.
any particular. I think it's part of a wider issue linked to sort of a lack of in university provision. I
Can
said,
I
isn't
just
it?
stop you there? Somebody's banging on the front door. So, Liz, will you just say that again? Because I had an interruption there because somebody knocked on my front door.
Was it a parcel?
It
Anyone else?
was a parcel. And it wasn't for me. It never is for me.
No, I'm just following on from what you were saying in that I think that this is part of a wider issue of lack of faith in university provision. So this second blog really came out of our thinking initially centered around initial teacher education, where, as we've seen with the market review and so forth, there's a lot of university providers have lost
Yes.
their provision, whereas some of these newer players, to go back to the gaming analogy, some of these newer players have been, have been accredited. And again, it's not to kind of cast any aspersions on that; it's to try and understand the processes behind it. And we do seem very much in a time of kind of private enterprise and like you say, connectivity and so forth. And I think to some extent that's perhaps become uncritically accepted. I'm not sure. I mean, one of the reasons that we wrote the blog is because we are interested in pursuing this further, as Mark was saying. And the Borough blog is quite a good way of putting an idea out there and seeing how people react to it And just like the dropping off a cliff blog, we've had a really big reaction on social media with people having an opinion on this, and many of them negative. And I say, Mark and I are keen to be even-handed in this, but sort of people commenting and saying that they'd done some of these, and there was lots of repeated content and so forth, and that lack of choice and professional freedom that we were talking about before. So
I
it does seem that people are kind of ready to talk about some of this.
yeah, I mean, just to, I'm not, I feel like a BBC reporter or so, but put the other side of it, was it a little bit, were the gov do you think the government or the DfE or whoever actually sort of drove this felt concerned? I mean, you can about just overall quality and messaging of some of these previous courses, that there was this sort of drive to, oh, well, let's bring it all together. And if we bring it all together and we actually get sort of some fairly solid providers, then actually we can ensure greater consistency in terms of the quality of the programs that are being pushed out towards, many teachers and school leaders. I mean, I suspect that was the thinking. I mean, trying to put it kindly rather than.
I think you're right, Frank, and I think it was in the beginning because it was almost open tendering to provide these courses because local authorities were encouraged to do it. And yeah, you had to meet certain standards, and we were monitored on a few things we did. But what happened was it got harder and harder as a local authority to win tenders. It was definitely less focused towards local authorities providing that training than it was to other providers. I think the last one just before I left that we were successful with was the phonics, which we it was very, very unusual that we were a local authority able to do the phonics training, mainly because of the very, very high quality people that we had. But then the monitoring of it was, you must use these words precisely, and you as an authority can't encourage these books because they're not the books that we want people to be using. So it got tighter. I don't. I mean, I left not long after we got the tender for that. So I'm not sure if that's continued to be as difficult, but. When I was in another authority after that, they were initial teacher education providers, and that again became impossible to do it as a local authority. You had to work with a MAT, and it was the MAT that had to submit the tender, even though the local authority were the ones doing all the work behind it. And I just thought the pathway there was fairly clear as to how it was going.
So does that actually lead neatly into the full house idea? There's a section in here about the full house, which I think you take an example of the Cranmer Education Trust, don't you, Mark? I think it's an example of how that was sort of developed. Do you want to just sort of say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't want to kind of, single out, kind of
One in
somebody.
particular, yeah.
We had to give an example, really, of, how this was manifesting itself, kind of, across the field, really. That you've got this, you've got the National Institute of Teaching there as the lead provider. You've got the nine accredited providers, but then they've got different hubs that they work with delivering. These qualifications. And I think what we picked up on in the advert was the business language that was there and the advertising for somebody to drive these business functions. And I think what struck us more than anything was the potential sort of precarity for these organisations of being so dependent on approval to have a lead provider to work with and to be delivering this stuff in the right way. And they're presumably sinking a lot of time and resources into this and employing people on this basis. And so there is these it's 80 something providers across the country who are involved in that delivery, which maybe kind of gives sort of an illusion of autonomy to an extent, that you may go to somebody local and say, oh, well, we're getting this NQ provisioned through them, but actually it's all being funneled back, through the same provider. So I think one of the things that we're keen to emphasize in the blog was, I don't think really there's any big winners in this specifically. It's a very controlled system for everybody in it, including, I think, the providers. And I think we mentioned in the paragraph about the NIOT, about the fact that they have a target of, £100 million in running costs to make themselves function, and that's part of their, strategy is linked to NPQs. And you've also got a lot of other organisations who are presumably dependent on the income from this and other training areas.
It's interesting also, isn't it, the use of those different organizations delivering all these programs. It's easy to use that as a sort of marketing ploy. With a recruitment and retention difficulty around senior leadership, it's easy to say, well, we're one of the big four. We're actually dictating, or we're leading on this professional development program. You really do need to get involved with us, rather than somebody, a smaller organization that we're delivering it to, shall we say, or connected with another organization, or not connected at all. So it that for me is also, I think, what I mean, going back to the initial teacher education debate, which we've had on here, that feels to me where that's going as well. It's being used as a sort of mechanism, not for the service, not for the wider service, but more of a sort of personal, well, this is good for our trust, this is good for our recruitment, this is good for leadership, we can influence what's going on. So for others, I suppose, going back to that paper, it might feel like a bad hand.
Yeah, I think, Stan, you were talking about consistency before and whether that's the driving force behind it. I mean, there's a very fine line, isn't there, between consistency and perhaps what feels like sort of monopolizing and say narrowing down the range of interests, really. I think this is one of our concerns about this so-called golden thread. In wider terms, is say not that we shouldn't be investing in teacher CPD. Absolutely, we should be investing in teacher CPD. But it's this golden thread of high quality evidence. And again, I think there's a very narrow range of who decides what that evidence is. It draws on a very, very narrow range, actually. And I think this is all part of, in the name of consistency, my concern is actually you've got a real kind of reduction in kind of teacher and school autonomy as a result.
And the risk, and I'm not saying that's there now, but the risk is ideological, isn't it? That you can control pedagogy and develop an ideology amongst schools because you're controlling virtually all the training that you're providing to leaders.
Well, and it links back to what we were just saying about money as well, is that where there's this kind of money involved, you've got to have evidence, haven't you, of what works. And the EEF is very, it's very kind of geared towards cognitive science right now. And again, it's not saying that those approaches don't work in the classroom, but it is about this very narrow evidence base. And that can become ideological, can't it, in terms of the approaches that teachers are being told to take in their own classrooms.
When you're as old as Frank and I, you can start to list those.
Steady
I
stuff.
can go back to ITN.
I've lived through a few of, through a few of those. I remember all my lesson plans and so on.
I mean, where are you going next with this? So you're reaching out. Obviously, you've had a fairly positive, well, a strong re response to the blog. I mean, what's the next stage of your work?
I think because the response has been so strong to it, it is something that we're keen to kind of reach out to people and kind of move on to the next stage, really, from the kind of initial sort of network analysis and looking at the organisations to connect with people to maybe do some interviews, focus groups, with people who have, who have undertaken NPQs and find out, what people's thoughts are really, and analyze those and see, what people, genuine sort of responses are to them.
I can say now that because I've heard it on this chat and I hear it regularly, that many of those programs do not prepare you sufficiently well, as the point Stan made, for the actual job that they're experiencing. And we had people from the headrest group on a similar spotlight last week. That's the group that act as a sort of like a anonymous phone call system for head teachers who are under stress. And they identified, sort of things have changed because of COVID. The job is different. And actually, I think colleagues have said to me that, some of these programs simply just assume that everything's going to be fine, whereas things are not fine. And they don't feel well enough prepared for some of these challenges, which for those people delivering or developing these programs, that, it would have been helpful to have been a head teacher during COVID, for example. That would have been a definite benefit, to actually sort of focus in on what some of those potential difficulties are going to be after COVID. So,
I have to say, Frank, though, in defence, I do meet head teachers who've gone through these programmes and have been very complimentary about it, well as those that have said it didn't prepare me.
Well,
So,
that's interesting in itself, isn't it?
yeah.
Bearing in mind the consistency issue, which is one of the issues we think as these have been developed for. But yeah, I mean, we'd be happy to connect you with anybody from our network, to make contact with Liz and Mark to sort of ensure that those sorts of discussions can take place, because there must now be surely time for an honest evaluation of the success of those programs. Are you putting yourselves forward then, folks? I mean, is anybody else looking at this at the moment in the research world?
I don't know how much research had been done elsewhere in NPQ specifically. It does seem to be a bit of a, and I think that's why the blog connected with a lot of people. It does seem to be a kind of an area that's not focused on as much as initial teacher training, and maybe not as much as, some things like the EEF and sort of general influences that are there. So it is something that we're hoping, get a lead on, really.
Okay. Well, the second delivery has just arrived. So I'm going to end the conversation there. So thank you very much for joining us. And we'll be back with another Frankenstein chat in a couple of days' time. Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
you. Okay.